I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this time by Lauren Wynn. What's up, Lauren?
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me back, as always. I feel like the longer I have, the more guest appearances I have on your podcast, the less authentic I feel as a Smallville fan, because like, I think when we watched Lucy, I was like, oh, that's funny. Like, it is a Lois Lane-centric episode. I don't think I've watched it more than twice. And then last time I was like, huh, I'm not sure I ever watched this more than once. And I don't think I watched tonight's episode more than once. So, you know what? Things will get really, really familiar around season 8. But it's really funny to observe that I apparently had this big blind spot in my Smallville fandom. That went unobserved for a while.
I'm similar in the fact that, like, I know, and we were talking about episode titles, you know, off microphone, and I could tell you every episode of Smallville, every title in order until about now. And then I could still tell you, like, most of the titles, but I really couldn't tell, like, I couldn't tell you what the order was of anything other than, like, the premiere, the mid-season, and then the finale. Like, when you go, like, if you start in the middle, like, episode 11, and just go out left and right, that is a big jumble of order for me for most of these seasons moving forward.
Well, it's funny, earlier this week, you were talking about lockdown, and for a second, I thought there's something going on at your work. I was like, oh, what's lockdown? What does he have to do? Like, he does, like, journalistic stuff sometimes. Like, what is this? I didn't realize you were talking about an episode of Smallville. We were talking about scheduling, and you were saying, oh, we have to do this before I have the lockdown one, and I just totally went over my head.
Lockdown, the next episode. So that's gonna do it for us this week on Always on Smallville. Stay tuned next time for Lockdown, but until then, Fanatic is the one we're talking about this week, and you know, I thought about this. There are lots of shades of other movies and plots and stuff, but I don't think this is really, to kind of really jump ahead, this isn't really like a movie plot as an episode, in my opinion. Okay, yeah, that's the one. Maybe I should. I think I will get it now because, no, in my head, I was like, this is a lot like Swim Fan or, you know, Fatal Attraction as well, obviously. You get your, like, political thrillers going on. So, man, you totally believe. Okay, I'm going to count it now. We've jumped completely to the end in more ways than one now because I am going to count it since you brought it up because Swim Fan was exactly the movie I was thinking of, which came out when I was in high school. And it was Fatal Attraction for teenagers, basically. But anyway, there's a lot going on in this episode. And it is more of a, you know, adult-centric episode, so to speak.
It really is. You have murder, you have nudity, you have arguable self-mutilation. I don't know.
So in Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. John Schneider had this to say about this episode and his plot line for running for senator. He said, quote, "We started to get into more adult storylines, relational storylines, with Jonathan running for Senate. We dealt with questions such as, should he run for Senate? Shouldn't he run for Senate? Did you do the right thing when you accepted Lionel Luther's help? Wonderful stuff, adult stuff." So he was a fan of this plot line, you know, being centered around him. I understand why. However, executive producer and director on the show, Greg Beeman, wasn't the biggest fan of this plotline. He said, quote, "You have the characters of the parents, and you have to service them. The whole problem with Jonathan was, what's he going to do besides run around on a tractor and bale hay and milk cows? So we came up with the idea. It initially was planned in order to get him and Tom Wopat together in that one episode, Exposed, which you were on, Lauren, so this is, there's continuity here. And that, I thought, was fine. That was successful. And the story was always designed to have him go up against Lex Luthor and into the 100th episode. So I thought the first episode when we set it up and the 100th episode where we paid it off were pretty good. I think in the middle, it just sort of stalled. And then finally, Annette O'Toole chimed in with her thoughts.
Everyone this week.
Everyone has hot takes on this episode. So Annette O'Toole said, quote, "I think it was out of character. I don't think it really would have happened because they've been so careful all of Clark's life about keeping the secret. And suddenly you're putting yourself out there in the public eye, though it was fun to do a big campaign scene." So, I mean, they're all over the map with this storyline. I think it's funny that you know, you were on Exposed when this first started and you were like, "Would you run for Senate?" If like, I don't know. Like,
if Zach asked, said, "Man, I'm not going to run for senator anymore. Will you run for senator? Would you do it?"
And here we are with this plotline. Now, I like you, this is not an episode that I revisit very often, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, that's the one where it starts out and Lois is going to shoot him. And it's like 48 hours earlier, which I'll get into. And I hate that. I hate In Meteor Res. I think it's a really lame, lazy storytelling technique. But I'm sitting here watching. I'm like, you know what? That was a very enjoyable episode. So I'm looking forward to where the conversation takes us, because I went from having no opinion leaning toward negative to really enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to these episodes that I've kind of forgotten revisiting them in this way.
I will say the pacing of this episode is kind of superior to all the other ones. Like, it doesn't feel as bouncy. Everything feels pretty connected. And like, the like side plot with like Clark and Lana doesn't feel like random. It doesn't feel like the drama of this week. It feels like authentic.
So it's interesting you say that, because I looked high and low for any kind of behind the scenes information about this episode, other than these hot takes everybody has on the storyline. Because there are a lot of deleted scenes in this episode. Lauren, could you wager a guess how many there might be?
7.
Very close. There's 6. So there are.
I was like, "What is the amount I've never seen on a Smallville DVD for one episode before?"
Well, you know, because usually I watch deleted scenes before the episode, so I can be watching the episode for when they might have been inserted, and then I'll kind of sometimes if they're only a couple, I'll bring them up in their conversations. Like, "Oh, by the way, there was a deleted scene here." But if there's a lot, I try to kind of get them out of the way off top, or we're totally gonna lose track. So let's just get that out of the way before we get into our discussion proper. There are 6 deleted scenes. Some are just moments, but the others are like real extended scenes. So the first one is during the scene where Jonathan gets the first phone call at his house, like, "Drop out of the race," right? And
that makes sense.
In the episode, right, he pulls out his heart pill and then he takes it. And you're like, "Oh, he has a bad heart. We're setting up his death in a couple episodes." Spoilers. But kudos to the editing team here, because what they did was they completely removed this scene where Martha comes up and talks to him about this, because Martha comes up and talks to him and says, you're taking a lot of those pills, this is wearing on your health, this is what I was worried about. And he's like, "No, I'm gonna be fine, don't worry about it." And then so then, you know, they have a good back and forth about this. And then she goes upstairs, and then we cut to, you know, Jonathan, we cut to the same shot of him like standing by the staircase, but they've edited around it by having that insert shot of him taking the pill out of the case. So I thought that was pretty clever. But that's a great scene, because it just leans into more of the, you know, adult stuff they're doing this episode. And and whenever the Kents kind of come at odds about something, it feels really authentic. I'm like, "Oh, look, they're not like perfect people, and they're not arguing about something ridiculous like Clark's powers. Like, these are real world issues they're talking about." And whenever you lose scenes like that, it's like, "Oh, that's too bad." So that's one scene that is missing. The second deleted scene is Clark and Lois at Central Kansas A&M putting up posters. And so we see Lois, she's putting up Kent posters over Lex posters, and Clark's there, and he's like, "I don't think we should be doing this. It seems like bad sport." She's like, "Why does anyone want to win?" You know? So she's doing that, and he's like, "Well, it doesn't seem very mature." And she's like, "I'm mature." And then this is a deleted scene, right? So it hasn't been completed. But her phone rings, and it's who is it? Some 80s band. It's not Whitesnake, but she's like, "Oh, they're the bomb." And they make a point about Lois's ringtone. I can't remember. I literally just watched this, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, is it Motley Crue? Motley Crue. Yeah, she's like, Motley Crue's the bomb. And clearly Clark is, like, finds her ringtone immature, and that's, like, the joke. Although you don't hear it, because it's not, these are deleted scenes. They don't have the post-production polish on them, right? So then she walks off, and, like, that's kind of random. What's that about? Well, don't forget that, because there's another deleted scene that ties back into that. So our third deleted scene is Jonathan. He's sleeping on the couch. I guess him and Martha really did get in a bad argument because he's on the couch. I don't know. Or maybe they gave their bedroom to Lois this time because I guess, well, no, Lois lives in the Talon. So really there's no excuse for Jonathan. I guess it is. He's literally sleeping on the couch because him and Martha are fighting. That's great. So he gets another phone call in the middle of the night and it's like, you know, drop out of the race, you know. I assume that's what it would say. We don't hear it because, again, the post-production is not polished and finished. He gets up. He's like, you stay away from my family. And then he sees that a picture of Clark, Martha, and Jonathan has been defaced, and Clark's face has been all scratched out. Because Martha's like, Jonathan's like, there's nothing you can do to get me to drop out of this race. But they're implying, you know, like, oh, I'm going to come after your son or something. And then he sees this fire outside. And, you know, it's so funny to see this out of context because without, like, the sound effects of, like, the crackle and of, like, a fire, it looks like he's just looking outside into, like, a blinking light, which is exactly what he's doing, you know, on set, Sean Schneider. And then he looks out the window, and there's a scarecrow that's burning in their front yard, but it has Jonathan's face on it from one of his campaign posters.
Wow, so really intense. They took out a lot from this episode. Yeah.
So that's the third scene. The fourth scene has Samantha finishing her shaven head because we see her start with like the buzzer, and then she like finishes the job with a fine razor. So it's just a little moment, but it just shows her completing the shaved head, which I think was completely, you know, unnecessary because like, yeah, we get it. We see her starting to shave her head.
And it's a better reveal when you see her later. And yeah, you're just like, oh, girl, she went for it.
She turns around, you know, the chair. So good. So...
So hammy.
Very swim fan. So the fifth scene is Chloe and Clark walking around Central Kansas A&M, the campus, and they're looking for Lois's cell phone. And Clark's like, just call it. And Chloe's like, hey, I know that you have superpowers, but I don't know if this is going to work. And he's like, no, trust me, call it. And then she calls Lois's phone, and we see, like, they shot the super hearing effect, where they did kind of, like, a time lapse where you super speed through this crowd, and you see the Lois's phone on the shelf in the campaign office for the Students for Lex Luthor, okay? So then Clark super speeds over there and goes in and finds the phone. Now, they only see pieces of this, but they use parts of it for when he goes to the campaign office and finds the dead guys on the floor and the picture of Samantha and Lex. And that's how he, you know, kind of puts things together, I guess. So I thought for sure somewhere online or in the books, like I'd be like, there was a subplot where Lois's phone was stolen and using for the calls against the kids. Right. Cause I think that's what they implied, that I think the Daily Planet scene with Lois and Clark would have Lois and Clark. Now there I am again. Freudian slip with Chloe and Clark, where they find the cell phone. And I know this is really getting into the weeds here, people, but you know, we got to get this out of the way. Okay, so I had no idea that there was so much to this episode. So I think maybe there was a subplot that even more deleted stuff that we didn't see, but Lois lost her phone, and then the students for Lex Luthor were using the phone to call the Kents because assumably they would trace the number and it would be, oh my God, it's Lois's number. Like, I don't know. Because I have no other explanation to why Chloe and Clark are walking around the college campus looking for Lois's phone. Okay. And then that ties back again to Clark remembering her Motley Crue ringtone. So that's how he knows to listen for that. And he's like, oh, trust me. Right. And that pays off that. And that's how he finds the phone. Now, I don't know how him finding that phone would help anything at that point, but that's that. Okay. So that's your fifth scene. And then the final scene, the sixth deleted scene, is right before Clark talks to Lana in the loft. He's down in the barn with Jonathan, and Jonathan has the crushed bullet. He's like, hey, Clark, thanks. And he's like, no problem, Dad. And that's the sixth deleted scene. Now, I noticed this a lot in season four, where they had a lot of deleted scenes and episodes. And I used to think, like, did they not do, like, a table read and time this thing out? Because, like, clearly, you know, before you film all this stuff, like, figure out, okay, we have a 42-minute time slot. Something has to go, right?
How much, like, what was the runtime of extra footage?
It was about 6 minutes. It's about six minutes. Yeah. So these are these are pieces of scenes. You know, these are in between other things. So I get why they're still there, but it's like, right, if you're gonna go like 6-7 minutes over, you think like, okay, let's figure this out and not waste the time and resources to film this stuff. You know, it's just so odd to me that there's like this radically different episode. Like you're sitting here listening to this, you're like, that God, this sounds like a lot. I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I was sitting there watching. I figured, okay, maybe there's like two really long scenes or something, but six, and so much happens. I was shocked. And to throw in, whenever there's an in media res beginning, I'm like, oh, well, clearly this episode ran long. And they're like, well, let's just use this part of the beginning and create some tension, and then we'll wrap back around at the end, and that's great. And that's what I would have assumed. That's what I always assume when I see this. But it's just so unbelievable that not only did we delete these six scenes, but there's one scene that's in here twice because they did the in media res. So anyway, there you go. You can find all these deleted scenes on your DVD or Blu-ray set. Go check them out. I have no idea. And again, I looked high and low for this kind of information, like what the process. Oh, well, we saw that it really wasn't coming together, so we rearranged them. No, none of that. No one says anything about that in anything I could find. So I have no idea why they changed this stuff. I have no idea what the original story was or what was up with Lois's Motley Crue cell phone. There you have it. Lauren, thanks for bearing with me there talking about these deleted scenes.
I will say, I have, well, for one thing, all episodes going forward, I'll watch the deleted scenes before I record with you.
You've certainly learned your lesson tonight, yes.
I did. But since I don't have that, I don't know that sort of, I guess, like, informed perspective on this. All I can say is, listeners, you should know that Zach has, like, a pencil in his hand. He's waving his hands around like a madman trying to explain all these scenes to me, and it's the funniest thing ever.
Good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. So.
I'm glad you have this outlet so you can go over your Smallville conspiracy theories.
Oh, man. I am right now, I am that meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That's right what now. I was thinking of.
Anyway, there you have it. That's all that didn't make the episode, but let's talk about what did make the episode. Fanatic.
I moved the rally to next week so Mr. Kent can recover.
Or not.
Dad, what are you doing?
I can't let him stop me.
I will tell them the rally's a go again. I thought the doctor said he was going to keep you overnight.
Oh, then they'd have exactly what they want.
Something tells me it's not the first time they've called, is it, Dad?
Jonathan, how could you keep this from us? We're in this as a family.
Are we? You've never been happy about me running, and now I'm guessing you want me to quit?
Maybe you're willing to risk your life over this, but I don't think I'm willing to stand by and watch.
I have got to see this thing through, Martha.
Do as I say, not as I do, huh, Dan?
Look, I never taught you to buckle under pressure, especially not from Lex Luthor.
Lex? You think he'd go this far?
There's no limit to what Lex Luthor would do, son.
Fanatic is the 10th episode of Smallville's 5th season. It aired on January 12, 2006. It was written by Wendy Miracle and directed by Michael Rohl. Now, Wendy Miracle, and I might be pronouncing her name wrong, this is the only episode of Smallville she wrote. But she did go on to write an episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, became a writer and executive story editor on Desperate Housewives, wrote Vixen and Arrow, the animated CW Seed shows, and then became a producer and writer on Arrow. So she started a long legacy of relationships with DC Comics with this episode. So, and despite her maybe writing a little too many scenes, you know, I think she did a good job. So anyway, although major strike against the episode already, what do we start out with? We start with in media res plus one for the tally board. What do you think about this story technique, Lauren?
I don't love it. The only one where it was like really fun was there are two that come to mind. If I am not mistaken, when Lana gets married, that's one, right?
Well, that, yes, that is one, but then, and that, of course, it did annoy me when I first saw it. But then I realized what they were doing was every act was the same day from a different character's point of view. So I thought that was more interesting than, here's what's going to happen in 2 days, like this one.
Right. And another example is, there's a season 9 episode where I think Lois and Clark get fired in the cold open, and it's just like a hudump sort of, you know, really funny situation, and you're like, oh gosh, God, what happened? And then the entire episode, you just find out the fiasco that led to them getting fired.
Yes, that is one that starts out with her in her bunny costume, I believe.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly what episode it was, but you're right. It's Franklin Stern, who's their boss at the Daily Planet,
right,
fires them. So, yes. So,
great episode. We'll talk about it in like 5 years.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
But other than those two, I think all the other ones annoy me. It's stressful. It's needlessly stressful. I sometimes have anxiety when I watch TV shows, and I come here to feel good.
Well, I find it's...
I'm being dramatic.
I just find that's a cheap way to create drama, because it's like they want to hook you in, but they don't have a good cold open or a teaser. So they're like, yeah, let's just show them something's going to happen at the climax and we'll have them build up to it. That's the way I,
you know,
see them doing it.
Sometimes when you watch Smallville, you're like, oh yeah, this ran concurrently with the show 24.
Okay. Then, you know, this is, you know, it is very, you know, this is a very politically charged episode, right? We get a, it starts with a politically rally. It does feel almost very 24. You know, when John Schneider comes out there, Jonathan Kane, he looks like very JFK-esque, you know. But
he does. Young, good-looking president. How old was John Schneider when he filmed this?
Like, late 40s, probably. Maybe 50, so.
How old was JFK? Jackie O was like 29, and I think he was like 37 or 38.
Yeah, because JFK was like... He was the youngest president ever elected, so he was in his, you know, late 30s. So.
Late 30s,
yeah.
Early 40s. I'm not sure. Yeah. Anywho, yeah, he looks Kennedy-esque.
Yes, I agree. And very much like the Kennedys, there's an assassination attempt on him. And this is my nerd coming out, but it felt very Star Trek VI to me. The climax of Star Trek VI, if you haven't seen
it. No idea what that means.
People, just go watch it, or go at least watch the climax of Star Trek VI. It's literally shot for shot the beginning of this episode, because you see there's a guy. It's the Federation, United Federation of Planets president. He's at a podium. He's giving a speech. There's a person with a sniper rifle. They cut out a hole in some glass. It sticks out. They get him the cross. Okay, and I know this is, you know, Manchurian candidate, right? There's a lot of visual language here from every like political assassination movie. But being the Star Trek nerd that I am, I was like, oh, Star Trek VI. So that's how this felt to me. Just all the elements and the way it was blocked and all that. But he's giving a speech. It's a really short speech, by the way.
This is television.
I assume that it was truncated for time. But of course, he has the great line, put the heart back in the heartland, right? That's a good line. I could see that on a poster, right?
I don't know. The one detail that stuck out to me, like with all the politicalness of this episode, was something that was kind of unintentional. At some point, someone's wearing a red hat that looks very familiar.
I noted that as well. Don't worry.
No comments other than that, but I was like, huh, whoa. And then I was thinking about people running for president or office who have no former experience. And that's it.
But the big hook here, the big twist is, you know, we go to the rifle and we see that, oh my God, it's Lois, right? And that's supposed to...
Which, props to my girl for knowing how to fire a sniper rifle. Like, we know she can fire a gun, but wow, chops, man.
It's all that military training with General Lane, so... But, you know, we get the bullet coming at the camera. It's a cool effect. And then we cut to the opening credits. And we come back, and what does the super say? 48 hours earlier. And I'm like, all right, one of these. Yeah. And it's Lex Luthor's campaign headquarters in his mansion. And he's got all these posters up. He's got these campaign managers, all this stuff. The Central Kansas Students for Lex Luthor comes in. And his campaign manager says, okay, you have 5 minutes. So Lex comes out. And he's got some great... He just dropped some great historical quotes from people and some great
knowledge. As soon as he started talking, I was like, oh, Lex Luthor on his BS. Of course he's doing some quote.
What did you think of his fans, though?
Well, I mean, we're reviewing an episode that everyone has seen already, presumably. I want to note something that I don't think that you would have noticed. She looks good in the scene, and she looks progressively worse throughout the episode.
Yes, the character of Samantha Drake, which is a real cool name, I like that name. Actress Annie Bergstein. Okay, and I was like, oh, what's she done? Since Smallville, and no, she's done some other things, but her biggest credit right now is she is a head writer on The Young and the Restless, which is a soap opera. So, you know, good for her.
I feel like you should just describe the face I'm making right now. Wow, no comment. What?
Didn't see that coming, did you?
Well, we talked once how like Justin Hartley went to soaps after Smallville. Maybe it's just an attainable thing after being on this great television show.
Right. Well, no, and you're right. She's a very attractive girl, and she becomes more, well, you know, she becomes more and more unhinged and crazy as the episode
she
progresses.
She really does. And her hair loses all its volume and luster, and it like sticks to her face until you can see the shape of her head, and then you can really see the shape of her head. And like they do something to her lip gloss too. They really like make her look crazy by the end of the episode. It's insane.
So he's going hyping up these students. It's funny, there's like the three people, like the head people, there's Samantha and these two other guys, and then there's a bunch of other kids behind him wearing these like vote for Lex t-shirts, you know. There's probably like 15 of these people,
right?
And if I were Lex Luthor and this college that is in my district, like this is the student population and there's like 12 of them, I would be concerned. Just saying. So, but my favorite line of this whole exchange is you know, Lex is talking to Samantha there, and he notices her necklace, and it says Lex.
Oh, God.
And she says to Lex, I used to wear a cross. It's like, that is brilliant. That is so good. That says so much. It's like, I love that. I love that line. So anyway, because he has become God to her.
It's one of those lines that you hear it, and then, like, as seconds go on by, it really sinks in, and you're like,
Yes. Kind of sneaks in there on you. Right. No, absolutely. But it really does inform the character. Like, that tells you all you need to know about this girl. So anyway, she also
which
gets,
I appreciate how gentlemanly Lex is to her throughout this whole episode.
Yes. I mean, yeah. He's got this young girl throwing herself at him, and he's like, you know, keeping his professional distance. So but he does pose for a picture with her, which I guess comes into play later, because, you know, she gets this picture with him, and she just mentions like, oh yeah, that's the painting you got when blah blah blah, just to show how much she knows and has obsessed about Lex. And then Clark finds this picture later, but it doesn't mean anything. Like that doesn't, like he finds this picture, like it's like the payoff to this picture being taken, you know, later on. But that doesn't help him save his dad. He just goes to his, you know, dad's rally. And, right. Oh, God, there's a bullet. Let me stop it. Like, his knowledge of who did that doesn't help anything. So, just pointing that out. So, anyway, Lex has to go, and he gets a phone call from Griff, our favorite informant, Griff. And
our favorite Kandorian.
Yes, Kandorian in Season 9. Also, in Arrow, the first two or three years of Arrow, as Captain Pike from the police force.
Oh, yeah.
But Griff tells Lex, oh, you wanted a grenade to throw in the Kent campaign? Well, I got an atomic bomb. So he tells him where to meet him. And a couple of iconic Smallville items here. He's in the phone booth, the one phone booth prop that Smallville owns. And this phone booth is underneath the overpass.
Which we talked about last time.
The famous Smallville overpass. So good. He's in there. And then who shows up with Lytle, right? And I love this scene because Griff like pulls a gun on him, and he's like oh, atomic warfare and local politics seems excessive, and he's like, I prefer the political tools. And he pulls out all this money, and he obviously there's a picture of something that, you know, Clark did, we're assuming, and because you know they never show us what this is, and Lytle buys it off Griff and then burns it right in front of him. And I love just that the image of Lytle smiling at Griff through the flames is so, like, evil, but he's doing a good thing. So it's interesting,
it's like,
Lytle, where
right.
He is now.
It's like evil and earnest at the same time.
Yes. But that's where Lytle is right now at this point in the show. He's very much of a wild card, because you're like, what's his deal? What's his agenda? You don't know, and it's interesting. So then we cut to the Kin house, and they brought this fake office in for Jonathan to be sitting at and posing for all his political campaign photos. And Clark's in a suit, Martha's in a dress, and Lois comes in and is like, this is ridiculous. You're not, this isn't you at all.
It's funny because when they started that scene, I was like, huh, I've never seen this part of the Kent farm before. I guess Jonathan has an office. I've just never seen it. And then they pulled out and I was like, ow.
Yeah, and Jonathan mentions that, oh, well, Seisnick here. I think that was the guy's name. Was it Seisnick? Like, it was a real weird name. That's what I got from it. I couldn't quite, I was too lazy to like turn on the subtitles, so I just rolled with it. But John's like, well, Seisnick here helped, you know, Jack win 5 campaigns. But you know, Lois kind of just says, hey, this guy is BS, he's misquoting you. And they pull out some newspaper article that Jonathan's saying something that he didn't say. So he and Seisnick, if that's his real name, he's being very condescending towards Lois. So Jonathan just fires him. So David Richmond Peck plays Seisnick. And I was like, this guy looks familiar too. Where have I seen him? And he is the meter maid in season 2, the episode Dichotic, where he gives Lex the parking ticket, and then Lex pulls out a golf club and destroys his golf cart.
Oh, okay.
This is that guy. So maybe that's that guy's brother in this universe. But anyway, I knew I'd seen him before. They fire him, and then Lois is the campaign manager. So again, this is the, like, we don't know what to do with Lois, so we're just going to give her these miscellaneous jobs for 4 years until we can make her Lois Lane, because she went from, you know, working at the Talon to now being Jonathan Kent's campaign manager. What did you think of this subplot now for Lois?
You know, I never minded it. Partially because I wasn't paying attention to Lois when I was younger and watching this. But I do like how she has agency. And I think it almost suits Lois to... She's a capable person. So if you give her a job, she's probably going to get it done. And this one does sort of... correlate to the skills she will have as a journalist. You know, like, she fact checks a guy in the beginning of the episode, and she has to stay up and current with current events. She, you know, she's really fighting for like freedom, better rights, all that. It's kind of in the vein of journalism, and I don't mind it for that like earlier stage in her life. Like, if you had to headcanon things about Lois Lane, like, you know, she definitely had an internship at the Daily Planet when she was younger, but she probably was involved in like political things when she was in college too.
I like that take, and it's definitely a lot more suiting for her at this point in her life than to be working at the Talon, right, for example. So a step up for a career and alignment with her journalism. So that makes a lot of sense. Good call. So
though I will say, since I'll just like defend Lois till the end of the world apparently, is she also strikes me as someone who can pick up a job whatever she needs to. Like, you know how, do you know any people like that who just like, I don't know, maybe they get laid off from their job and they're like, well, I need to make money so I can just get this waitressing job like real quick. Like, that's actually pretty impressive. Like, I could not do that if I suddenly was out of work.
So, yeah, I mean, she's a survivor for sure.
Yeah.
So I like that. So now that she is the campaign manager, she's got a big job ahead of her. But before that, Jonathan gets a phone call. And it's, he's like, oh, this is Jonathan. And it's like, you need to drop out of the race. Like, I told you to stop calling my house and bothering my family, right? And he hangs up the phone. And then he pulls out what I thought was like a compass or something. I was like, what is this? But it's a really sophisticated holder for his heart medication.
Do you think the Smallville art department was like, this is a show about Superman, let's give him bright red pills?
Yes, yeah,
they looked like there's a candy that looks like that.
Yeah, it really did. What are they? Yeah, they're like hot something or.
Oh yeah, yeah, Mike and Ike or something or whatever the hot version of that is.
Yes, they really did.
Hot tamales.
Like, hot. Yes, that's it. That's what those look. Does this not look like pills? Have you guys seen pills before? Like, these giant.
They look like they have like a sort of like a licorice outside to them. Like,
that would taste great.
And it's like,
I think,
the color of like the apple runt. Yeah, it's bright red. It's so jarring, and it comes out of this compass, which is this compassy looking thing, which is blue and gold. So It's like real subtle.
As usual, Smallville. So, you know, obviously this is causing stress on him. That's why he's taking this heart medication. As we discussed earlier, there's a whole scene that was deleted here between him and Martha, which is now gone, which was a great moment between them, which helps to escalate their stress between each other about the situation. But it is expertly cut around, because then we just completely remove it with this insert shot of this compass with candy in it. And then Jonathan is back up. And then he's just standing there looking concerned, which also is, you know, we make fun of it not being subtle. It is subtle to not have someone say, hey, you're taking a lot of those heart pills right now. That's what, you know, Martha does in the deleted scene. But in the episode, it's just like, hey, it's something that he's dealing with himself and not telling anybody. So it actually, it works both ways. So anyway.
They're bright red. Not letting that go.
So we cut to Lois putting up Kent posters at Central Kansas A&M. And then Samantha comes and tears him down. And I'm not sure if this is a replacement scene for the one with Lois and Clark, because it's in the exact same location. So I don't know if that's supposed to be before or after this. You know, I don't know off the top of my head. But Clark is not involved in this at all, and he was in the other scene. So I'm not sure. But Samantha rips this down. She's like, this is too big for our, you know, all campus rules state that all political posters much, you know, blah, 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 blah. And Lois is like, you're taking this a little too seriously. But Lois, of course, you know, goes about her business. And then Samantha and her two lackeys here, they're like, she's telling them, we gotta take stuff to the next level. You know, Lex asked us to raise the bar, and that's just what we're going to do. So we know that they're going to get fanatical about this situation. Nobody says fanatic in this episode. I was disappointed. I was listening for it. I thought surely at some point someone's, you're being a fanatic, but no one says that. So, but if that's what they're being,
I could have seen, like, you know how Lex and Clark always have like their powwows at the end of the episode, and like Lex like summates what happens in like a way that makes it seem like barely anything happened. Like, oh, Clark, you know, she was just a fanatic, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been the time.
Yeah. Lionel and Lex, like, when they had their last conversation, I thought, oh, maybe it's going to come up now, because they throw some other words around. Like, I think Lex calls them psychopaths or something. So unfortunately, they don't say fanatic, but they're going to raise the bar to make sure that Lex wins. So we're going to see what form that takes. But then we get Lana. I met you. She's studying her quote-unquote astronomy homework, which she's been talking about all season. And it turns out it's been meteor shower stuff. So we know what she's looking into. She saw the ship at the season premiere. She's been on this since then. But then Clark comes in. So we have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because he's wearing his Superman costume.
I didn't realize this happened. There are two things. I'll tell you the second thing when it happens. The first unsettling thing I had to see this episode was Tom and Kristen Crook kissing. I don't know why. I literally just cannot stand them after like season one and two. Like, I wasn't prepared for that. And I was like, oh, God, I forgot that this happened in the series. He's drawing for me as
is
a,
it the,
as a
is it the way
fan.
That is it the way that they kiss, or is it just the fact that it's Clark and Lana?
Probably both. I was not prepared for it.
They have a way of kissing, which is like them eating each other's face. And as a young man watching the show, I was like, oh, this is how you kiss people, you know? And I quickly learned, like, I literally was told once, like, I don't want you to eat my face. So I was like, well, yeah, this is what they do in Smallville. I'm sorry. I thought that's what you do. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's always like
3 years after you watch this episode. That was not, in fact, how you were supposed to kiss someone.
I kissed somebody before 3 years after this episode. But anyway, really, kids, do not base how to kiss people off Clark and Lana, because it seems very unnatural. Like, I guess they think it looks hot and heavy, but it just looks weird to me. You know, if you guys are out there and this is the way you kiss, and you got it, good for you. I say you do you, but I'm saying in my experience, it's just odd, and I always thought that too. So, and you know, speaking of, you know, them getting hot and heavy, Lana is, shall we say, in the mood. They apparently had plans to go to the ice skating rink, because that's what you do. Everybody remembers that Clark took Alicia there. Because so what do you do when you have an ex-girlfriend? You take the new girlfriend to the old place and make some new memories. And that's what Clark was going to do. They start making out some, and I was like, oh, we could stay in, right? And then she's like, ow. And then Clark like freaks out. He's like, whoa. He's like, yeah, did I hurt you? Did I hurt you? She's like, no, unless she was signed. It's a funny joke. Unless she was signed blah, 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 rotation of planets astronomy, because she has like her protractor on her bed. And that's what like stabbed her in the right. back or something. But I think it actually is a nice way of showing that what the issue is right now between Clark and Lana.
I agree.
They're having intimacy issues, and it's a nice way to lead us into that, because he's afraid now that he has his powers back that, you know, if he kind of loses control, he could hurt her, which is a very legitimate concern.
I see where Clark's coming from. It's interesting because the last time I watched this, God, I was like 14 or 15 years old. I'm like twice that age now. So like, I'm sure when I was watching that, I was like, oh, I see where Clark's coming from. He just wants to protect her. When I watched this scene, like earlier, because he rounds off on her. He kind of gaslights her. She even says it like, nice deflection.
Yeah, because why is it always about me? Well, you're right. Studying your books
just like,
over here.
Oh my God, Clark is such a dummy. He is such a dummy, and this is such a crappy way to treat someone. She's just trying to get to like the problem, and like he's just being a butthole about it. So it was very interesting to just realize that the last time I probably watched this episode, I don't think I saw any fault in his behavior. Now I'm just like, oh, Clark, you are such an 18-year-old boy.
Well, you know, you look at it from her perspective. She's like, yeah, what's going on here? Because she tells him, she's like, you know, we haven't been together in months. And he's like,
I mean, that's a reasonable thing. Like, you know,
he's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean together? And she's like, sex. He's like, oh, that. It's like, wow, show. We've come a long way since season four. They're like, well, you know, Jason is a college student. And you know what that means? He's ready for more. Adult, like they're talking around it, but this is like Lana's like, yeah, you know, we haven't had sex in a while, Clark. What's going on?
Okay, so points to Lana. I will give them this. It's kind of cool that she's having this part of the conversation,
right? Alpha Lana, you know. And you know, and they do mention here like this has been since he quote unquote miraculously came back from the dead, which is like a big thing, like you know, hidden. You know, Clark died and he came back and. Everything was cool. Like, nobody really questioned anything. You know, we find out later, as Chloe mentions, that Lana brings this up every day, as you would if your significant other died and came back. You'd be like, what the hell? You know, give me something. Like, I told you, I can't explain that.
Came back and was wearing clothes that made you look like you're part of an explosion from, like, old Hollywood.
Yeah, very suspicious to come back in this like destroyed clothes. Like, at least he didn't know Lana was going to come over that second, but it's like, bro, you got to use some super speed and change because that is not helping your cause. And to your point, though, Clark tries to turn around on Lana. He's like, you're the one who pulled away first. You went to college and you're studying. You know, it's like,
what's up with that, basically?
That is real bad, as you said, gaslighting. You know, Clark's in a tough spot, but, you know, he didn't need to go there. And it's interesting to see him go there with Lana, who he really has kid gloves around. So.
Agreed. And
he calls her astronomy studies an obsession, which, I mean.
Right. Clark, what?
The guy has a telescope in his loft. So, and we know that she's into it because of the meteor showers, but it is perfectly justified. So it's a weak defense, Clark. And like Alana, as you said, she's like, nice deflection. So she's not, she's like, I don't fall for that anymore. I'm like, good for you, Lana. I'll take this crap from this guy. So. Anyway, she goes to get some air and she storms out. So then we come back to the Kent farm and Jonathan's doing some work in the barn. And I was kind of confused by this. He's cutting something up and then he finds a cutout of his face on the ground of the barn. And I was like, again, in the deleted scenes, this face cutout is on a scarecrow that's burning outside the house. I don't know if that's supposed to happen before or after this scene. I have no idea. But I think they're somehow connected. But he finds this, you know, obviously someone's ripped up his poster, and he gets beat up by the three amigos who are in charge of the Students for Lex Luthor at Central Kansas. And they beat him up pretty good. And then they leave, clearly thinking, oh, we're going to take him out of the race. This is just a stupid strategy. As we find out, he gets, you know, lots of points for this out of, you know, sympathy for sure.
This is something out of like a Lois Duncan novel. Did you ever read her novels where just teenagers act really
No.
Like Mr. Griffin and like Gallows Hill, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, like so that, okay.
Where it's just like teenagers being like horrible and like just like committing these violent acts.
Thinking that there's no consequences for them. Like, yeah, we're just going to go beat up this guy.
Yeah.
And they're not even like wearing masks and stuff, you know? Like, at least wear a ski mask or something. Cause like Jonathan could wake up and like they didn't kill him. So he's going to wake up and they could possibly, you know, trace these people back to who they are. So they didn't really think this one through. So, that's why
it's because they're Kansas Central A&M students, not MetU students.
That is the difference right there. MetU students would have killed him on the first attempt, which Samantha takes her the second attempt to figure out, oh, we just need to kill him. That'll solve all our problems. So they have Martha taking the trash out at the Talon because she works at the Talon. Let's not forget. And, you know, this is a nice subtle moment. Where she takes out the trash and she sees the poster of Jonathan and she just like looks at it like, you know, I don't know, by this show's standards, this is subtle. Okay.
Zach, you know? I really cannot explain to you how funny it is for me to like drop in and watch these random episodes and like get godsmacked by like a lot of things. One, like I haven't watched the show in forever. Two, this is not how TV's done anymore. Three, they overstated things that were just not cut it anymore. Like the fact that Smallville has like, they treat behind the Talon like the alley in like they treat the back alley for the Talon like crime alley in Gotham. It's like this is where the shady stuff happens. It's like in Smallville. And it's so funny that they go to this as like a backdrop for scenes like this, because when you think about it, it's preposterous. I think since you watch it episode to episode, you're less aware of that, and I come in, I'm like, why is this the designated sketchy place of this episode?
This is where the business goes down behind the town.
I know.
Because she's you know, staring at Jonathan's campaign poster, and then Lionel comes up out of nowhere. He's like, oh, it's true what they say, behind every great man is a great woman, which is his, you know, it's so great, because he's there to help the kids, but he does it in his Lionel way, and he's kind of subtly hitting on Martha, as he always does. And I like what she's just like, well, I'm glad you're finally behind your son with something, Lionel, because he's talking about how, well, unfortunately, you know, you guys are out of money. And he's like, and she takes it as him trying to talk them to quit. But he's like, no, you misunderstand. Like, Lex has limited resources, so I just want to keep you guys in the race. And he hands her some check for, you know, some ungodly amount of money, we assume.
Question, is that illegal?
Is it?
Because for like a presidential candidate, I think one person can only donate $2,300 or something. I'm assuming there are similar rules with other elections.
Well, this is a state Senate seat in Kansas in 2005, so who knows?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
You think this stuff doesn't go on all the time. You know, I mean, it might be illegal, but it's believable. So, but regardless of that, Martha
is pointing with his pencil.
My pencil. Very animated this episode. All right. So, Martha turns down Lionel's help. But Lionel makes a good point. He's like, oh, perhaps you have some personal reasons for not wanting him to win. And then he leaves. And it's true, because she, you know, she's seen what it's doing to his health. She's worried about the secrecy, you know, the family that they always have to keep because of Clark. So he's got a good point. But at this point, she's not going to take him up on his offer. So, but don't worry, we'll come back to the shady alley later in the episode for some more business to go down. So the next scene we have is Clark and Chloe at the Daily Planet.
I like this scene.
This is an interesting scene, because he's like, so Chloe, how far do you want to test these boundaries of our friendship? And she's since when did we have boundaries? And then here we go, right?
Wait, so I have a question. Do you have a best friend that is a girl? Have you ever had a best friend who is a girl?
I mean, yeah, I guess. But you mean like an additional best friend or my only best friend?
Despite best being a superlative, you could have multiple best friends, in my opinion. But the reason I ask is I've had like a lot of like best guy friends my entire life, and it's a really interesting dynamic. So I really liked seeing this. I thought it was fun. You know, it's fun to see guys and girls talk about things openly.
Yeah, there's a very self-aware awkwardness to this, because I think there's another layer to this too, because Chloe did, and let's face it, does and always will have a thing for Clark. So for him to be like, so let's talk about me and Lana's sex life, she's like, okay, whoa. But yes, it is it's an uncomfortable topic, but it's also it's a very realistic thing. Cause then Clark really starts.
It's pretty cool
that
they're talking about it.
Yeah, no, because if these people are really friends, I mean, if this kind of stuff comes up, you know. But then,
right, when, and at this point, like, Chloe is like is his best friend. Like, Pete's not around anymore. He probably never talked to Pete about any of this stuff.
Right.
And if he did, we certainly didn't get the benefit of seeing it. What's weird is Allison Mack is very likable in this scene.
Awkward factor eight.
Yep. But also, Tom's acting is really great. And, like, there's this one part where he, like, almost makes his eyes, like jiggle in his eye sockets. And it's, like, really amazing.
It's in the part where he's like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking if I, like, really lose control. So he really is, like, I believe that this guy is talking to her about this stuff. And it really is
right.
A good scene between them.
Yeah, it was a really good scene, in my opinion.
But it is this is a classic dilemma, but there is this, dare I say, essay. It's called Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex, right? It's by Larry Niven, who's a sci-fi writer. And this is what they're talking about here. They're basically talking about Superman having superpowers and being intimate with a human woman, right? And if there's any problems with that, you know? So Superman 2 solved this by just having Superman give up his powers before he got together with Lois, but, very good on you there, Superman 2. But we're in this, you know, this is a thing that exists in the conversation about Superman, but the show eventually overcomes that. Like in season 9, Chloe asks him, like, I thought you had problems with this. He's like, oh, I had training with Jor-El. I learned control now. So it's like, okay.
Normally we just talk about Smallville, like riff off of stuff like that, but I ever told you one of my like hottest Superman takes, because I think it's relevant to what we're talking about now.
Please share.
I think the only power that Clark has access to 100% of the time is the impermeability of his skin.
Okay.
I think of everything else as just like you know, like as people, we decide to use our strength. We're not using, we don't have the full access to our strength at any point. It's a focused thing. With him, it's just he has more strength. I think he is invulnerable. And his skin is impermeable 100% of the time, but he's not always like operating at super speed. That's something that's triggered. His hearing isn't triggered either. Because when you think about it, if Clark was always experiencing the world in like, you know, sort of like a Barry Allen time frame, like mentally he would be like thousands upon thousands of years old, and he's not. Clark is a dummy. He's like a normal guy. Like, he's just not. So that's one of my explanations to how he can be a normal person. I think that the strength thing is one of the things that could, I think the strength thing is something that, like, if he was in danger of tapping into any of his powers too much, that'd be like the easiest one to mess up. But other than that, really, I just think that he is invulnerable at all times, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, Chloe even says here, like, well, you shake people's hands without crushing them and open doors and that kind of thing. So it's just a matter of, you know, not overthinking it. So I understand what his concern would be, because he's like, well, I don't know what would happen, you know. So but I like your theory there, because you're right. He's not hearing everything all at once with his super hearing, and he learns to control that. You see some of that in Man of Steel, you know, where he's like overwhelmed by his powers and he overcomes that. It's a good weakness to use it against Zod for like 5 minutes until Zod can figure out how to hone his senses. But you know, in Man of Steel, but no, that's a good. I don't think that's a hot take. I think that's an interesting take. So. But we wrap up here, and Chloe says, look, Clark, you know, I think Lana knows more than you think she does, and why do you think she's studying astronomy? And, you know, you need to stop playing defense and go on offense, because sooner or later she's going to start asking the wrong people the right questions. So, again, Clark just being in denial about this whole, like, oh, we can't tell Lana anything. But to be fair, I mean, we'll get there in a couple episodes, but he finally decides, right, you know what? I'm going to tell her everything, right? and then she dies like that day. So it's like, okay, I guess I was right. You know, for all this crap we give Clark for not telling him his secret, he finally does it. She dies the same day, people. Okay, so let's not be paranoid or call Clark paranoid because he's right. So anyway.
Can we just make that more about him trying to propose to a girl when he's 18 years old?
Yeah, I mean, dude,
that's the true mistake of that episode.
Did you ask Henry Small for her hand in marriage? I don't think so. With what resources are you guys going to build a life? Tell me. So anyway. So this is what's odd here, and this is what makes me, this is what's a red flag to me. Like, this episode has been reshot and moved around because we go from this scene, Chloe and Clark in Metropolis at the Daily Planet, and then Clark comes home to the Kent house with his mom because they would just went to the store. It's like,
right, that was kind of weird.
Did we not have another scene from somewhere in this episode we could slide? It's not some Lex scene where he's looking at something on a computer we could have put in here. I guess not. So they come home and they can't find Jonathan. So they go out to the barn and he's hanging upside down. So I thought,
this was a really impressive visual. Did you notice how like literally like all the blood was in like his head and like he had like this one like sort of veiny part of his temple that was like bulging out the side of his skull? It's like they really did that.
No, you're right, because this is a real easy thing to look to make look just fake. Like somebody looks, they have like perfect hair and makeup and they're just hanging upside down and they're like, oh no. But you know, Jonathan really does look distressed here, so good attention to detail for sure. And you know, I thought they were just gonna leave him like beat up on the ground, because like they go into the barn and they find Shelby and they have to look up to find Jonathan. Like, oh yikes. So this warrants a hospital visit. So we have a hospital visit plus one. And Lois says to the Kents, like, okay, hey, I'm going to move your rally to next week. And Jonathan, he's like, no, we're going to put it on now. And he's already getting dressed and getting out of bed. And, you know, Martha's pretty upset by this. And him and Martha actually have, like, an argument here. He's like, I got to seize through the end, Martha. And she just storms out. And Clark's like, do as I say, not as I do, huh, Dad? Like, thanks a lot, Clark. But do you think Jonathan's being stubborn here, or what? What's your take on his response to this situation?
Jonathan Kent being stubborn? What are you talking about? He's never like that. That's not a foundation of his personality at all.
The complete 180 Clark does in 30 seconds here is very amusing to me. Because Jonathan's like, oh, you don't think Lex Luthor would, you know, do anything to win this race? And Clark's like, what? You think Lex did this? And Jonathan's like, Lex Luthor's capable of anything, son. So Clark goes from like not even crossing his mind that Lex did
this. He literally turns around. He literally does a 180, and then Lex is there, and then he just accepts it and he rounds off on Lex like he always does.
He's like, here to admire your handiwork, Lex. Basically, you know, he comes in there and he's like, oh, I'm here to check on your dad. He's like, this is as close to my dad as you're gonna get. He's like, well, you don't think I did this, do you? He's like, oh, well, wouldn't you think you would have done it, Lex? I'm like, what, you didn't think he did it until, like, your dad brought him up? So that is funny that Clark immediately, he's gone from not thinking Lex was involved to, like, accusing Lex to his face. So, poor Lex, right? And I like how they briefly talk about why Lex is doing this, because Clark's like, why are you doing this, Lex? Why do you want to be senator so bad? He's like, it's a stepping stone. And Clark's like, what if you win and you're still looking for something? Because Lex, I like what he says. He's like, look, Clark, you have everything you've ever wanted, but some of us are still out there searching, you know, for our place. And Clark's like, what if you don't find what you're looking for? And Lex says, there's always the White House, which I love the continuity. President Lex, they keep pushing it in the show. So good on him for that. I wish we'd see that in a film at some point, but I guess we're not going to get it. So we got to get crazy Jesse Eisenberg. That's Lex Luthor. That guy's not winning presidency, but here, have a Jolly Rancher. So, you know, Lex, although he did want to destroy the Kents campaign with his secret from Griff, he did want to just at least check and make sure Jonathan was okay. Because, like,
Sorry, what did you think that secret was? We never talked about that.
Well,
whatever was on the paper.
A picture of Clark, no doubt. So, the same...
I wondered... Go ahead.
I assume this is the same thing that Lionel shows Jonathan in Reckoning. Although we see Lionel burn it as soon as he gets it. So it must be something else, but it's like the same like envelope. So I don't know. I'm confused. But I assume it's something to do with Clark using his powers.
For some reason, I thought it was like something to do with his adoption record.
Mm.
Oh.
Nah.
<I
don't
think so>. Fine.
But that's the thing, right? I mean, Lex, he's still not, I mean, although in Lexman's, he's like, I'm going to choose the evil path. But he didn't want to, like, see Jonathan, like, in a hospital. He just wanted to have him lose the race. So, although, you know, he's willing to go get dirt or dig up dirt or make up dirt about Jonathan, he doesn't want to see him in a hospital. So, and then he tells Clark, don't worry, Clark, we're going to find out who did this to your dad. It's like, oh, okay. So it's still toeing the line of good and evil there. But you know who did this is the students for Lex Luthor at Central Kansas University. And we cut to them in their campaign headquarters, which is just this room with Lex Luthor posters everywhere.
It's like the torch. Yes. Wait, did they use the set for the torch for that, actually? No, I mean, because the torch became the bullpen, correct?
I'm not sure exactly, but it did look a lot like the torch, right? And yeah. Like, the purpose of campaign posters is to put them up in the public to raise awareness for your candidate, not to make wallpaper of your campaign headquarters. Like, that's a complete waste.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. You're so right.
It's like, oh yes, good Lex. I forgot. Let me vote for him. Like, yeah, everyone in this room is going to vote for Lex. So why put up 1,000 posters on the wall here? But there is a newspaper headline, which I'll take a screenshot of. It says, Kent attacked, voters rally. So this really upsets Samantha. But the other two guys are like, hey, look, we've already gone too far. We should just turn ourselves in before this gets too... And Samantha doesn't like this. So when one of the guys leaves to go tell the cops, she pulls out a gun and shoots him, you know, as you do, right?
I don't think you can get a gun. I mean, I get it. She's crazy, but where did she get a gun? Also, well, can we talk about the fact that she just had those clippers in the office?
So she shoots the guy that's going to leave.
Like, she thought about this.
Well, she shoots the guy that's going to leave, right? And then she just shoots the other guy just because. And then she pulls out this razor, you know.
Just screw you too.
I use an electric razor, but I don't carry it around with me at all times. I guess women have purses. It's easier for them to do. But I don't know why she would have this razor. She just pulls out, looks in the mirror, and just starts immediately shaving her head.
This is the other thing I was really uncomfortable about. this is why I never watched this episode ever again. I didn't know if she would actually do it for a while. I thought she was just gonna move it against her scalp and they were gonna like have chunks of hair come out that weren't hers. But no, like this girl, this actress, she literally shaved her head. That's not a wig. Like that's her head.
That's so dedication. They gotta respect that, right? Smallville's all about actors shaving their heads on screen, right?
I personally like basically have like a fear of like being bald, like I'm like, oh, which mean girl? Like the hair is their power. Hair is full of secrets or whatever. Lance would know this. My buddy Lance would know this if you were on the podcast.
Lance would know.
Anywho, like I have long hair and I've always had long hair my entire life. And like literally, whenever speaking of the Lois Duncan novels, the I Know What You Did Last Summer, when what's her face Sarah Michelle Gellar is attacked at night and then she wakes up in the mirror and she starts pulling chunks of her hair out. Have you seen this movie?
No. But isn't that Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Jennifer Love Hewitt is the final girl. Sarah Michelle Gellar, I think, is in it, but she's killed off earlier in the movie. So basically, whoever the fisherman person who's killing off people.
The fisherman
person. It's like a guy in a raincoat with a hook.
Ghostface.
He's killing
yes.
off people, and he attacks Sarah Michelle Gellar in the middle of the night, and she wakes up, and she like runs her fingers through her hair, and then she pulls out a chunk of hair, and she keeps on doing it. Like, all this hair comes out, and stuff like that literally scares me. Like, these are, like, the most traumatizing things I saw as a child. Like,
well, that's a legit nightmare. If you have a nightmare about you losing your hair, that means something. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I have a dream analysis book on my shelf that told me that.
I just don't want to, like, not... It's not like this is my nightmare. I have nightmares of certain things. Like, this is just like a living nightmare. Like, this would be the worst thing that could ever happen to me. Like, no offense to not to like even make fun of this, to criticize this lifestyle. If I got cancer, I would not go through chemo. I would just die because like that would be the worst thing that could happen to me.
Well, you never know until you try. Like, Natalie Portman looked great. Shaved head.
No.
For Vendetta, right?
No.
No?
No. No, I'm saying no. Like, I could never not have long hair. Zach, the shortest my hair has ever been is, like, when it was growing out of my head. when I was like 3 years old. The shortest, like my hair otherwise has always been like past my shoulders. So this is all to say that this was like traumatizing to watch. Like, oh, I can't believe I had to see Clark and Lana kiss. And then I had to see a girl literally shave her head. Like, oh, it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mentioned Star Trek 6 earlier. I'm going to mention Star Trek, the motion picture right now. Guest actress, I believe she was Mrs. Universe in the 70s, but Pierce Kavada is the actress, and she is an alien who is completely bald. She looks beautiful, so you never know until you try. So
I know. I will. My hair is always going to be like waist length. One, two. Oh my God! Why would I ever shave my head? No.
So if you were an actress. And your big break in your role was like, okay.
Zach, if you offered me $2 billion right now, I would not do it.
All right,
would not do it.
All right, so let the record show. Let the record show.
You can't offer me my life. You can't offer me any sum of money. There's nothing in the world that can make me go bald.
Lauren has two things, her integrity and her hair. All right, she's not giving those up.
It's the same thing.
So she was triggered by this scene. Needless to say. So we'll just move on. But Samantha here, she is shaving her head to look like her idol, Lex Luthor.
She's actually doing it. It's not fake. She's actually doing it.
So Lex is on his phone and talking about how Griff never showed. So he went to go check out, you know, Griff at the phone booth under the overpass, and he wasn't there. So he comes home to find Samantha sitting in his office chair. She spins around. Now she's completely bald, which that deleted scene would have shown us, but they took it out. And wearing nothing but a robe.
Wait, I forgot to mention in the previous scene, her hair was super, super flat. As I said, it lost its luster. It lost its sheen. It lost the volume. Like, they made her look really, really presentable in her first scene of the episode. And then like throughout the episode, she just kind of looks like she hasn't been showering or washing her hair.
Look, this is only over the course of 48 hours, so she probably didn't take a shower. They were taking extreme action to go beat up Jonathan Kent. So it's been a tough 2 days for her. I love how Rosamund plays the scene. He's like, oh, I didn't recognize you for a moment. And he like gestures to his head because she's bald now. And she comes up to him and then drops her robe. So now she's like completely naked. And he's like, I have everything I need except for better security, which is a good joke because everybody gets into Luthor Mansion. She says, like, doesn't everyone know that you're not supposed to use your birthday as a passcode or your brother's birthday? So this just shows that she knows way too much about Lex Luthor because not a lot of people know about his brother. But I really like how Lex is playing the scene because she mentions, you know, about Jonathan, and he's like, oh, well, he's not going to be a problem anymore. And he really turns on her. He's like, look, I don't care how much you've read about me, you know, I would never hurt the kids, you know. And then she knocks him out with a bottle of liquor, right? I don't know, like, I've never tried this on someone, and fortunately no one's ever tried this on me. I don't know if just having like having a vase or a bottle of something broken on my head would make me pass out. Like, I don't know about that, but fair enough. But this is a real good scene though. Right, I think between her and him, and just shows you how crazy she is.
It shows you how crazy she is. It shows you that there's still like these residual parts of Lex that are good, and if not good, still, I guess, good at taking control of situations. Like, again, he has like this sort of chivalrous like element to him. Like, he has this like respect for how things are supposed to be, and whether it's something he absolutely believes in or not, I like seeing it.
And then when he gets knocked out, she kind of crawls over him, and it's like, it's okay. You had a moment of weakness. Right? I thought she was totally, like, what a wasted opportunity. I mean, I'm just saying, like as far gone as she is, like, she would totally have done that, all right? Because, like, as she tells him, like, I think this is the last line before she breaks the bottle on him. She's like, you're losing your edge, Lex. He's like, and you've clearly gone over yours, which is, like, such good punchy dialogue.
Not to make this like a R-rated podcast, I won't go into specifics, but some people have like kinks, very unusual kinks, and, you know, maybe shouldn't have to kiss him because the fact that it seems like she is like obsessed with him sexually, she wanted to give herself to him, But also, she modeled herself after him. That's maybe she doesn't want to kiss him. Maybe she wants other things.
Yeah.
Use your imagination.
Yes, I believe it's
some Greek word that explains the I don't know, the complex.
It's like the reverse of the Tina Greer thing where she was a shapeshifter, right? And she's like, I remember in the X-ray, I think somebody said it was like Pete. He's
oh,
like,
actually, yeah.
Does she want to kill Lana? No, worse. She wants to become Lana. And that's the first episode. When she comes back in Visage, she wants to be with Lana. So it's kind of the reverse, perhaps, of that. But that's the same kind of thing what we're talking about here. Like, you idolize someone so much, you like want to become them. And then, like, if that doesn't work, you want to be with them or vice versa. So, yeah, there's lots of weird psychological issues going on here.
And she's not even a meteor freak.
No, she's just a normal, crazy person. So... So anyway, we cut to Clark at the Daily Planet, and he's brought Chloe this list of blocked calls that have been calling the Kents' house. And Chloe, this is a weird thing. She like theorizes that Jonathan is like envious of Clark, or like feels like a macho need to, you know, do this because his son is superpowered. Like, I don't know. I disagree with this analysis of the situation. Chloe's usually on point with stuff, but I disagree here. But she looks up the numbers, and they find that the numbers trace back to the Students for Lex Luthor office at Central Kansas A&M. So notice here, though, and this is what shows me, like, they totally rejigged this episode. Clark is in his red and blue here, you know, in the scene with Chloe. And then they find out, oh, it's at the school. So he super speeds over there, and he's wearing his plaid and a jacket, which he's wearing at the end of the episode. And... like, unless he, like, waited the next day or something, you know, to go over there. That shows me this was a reshoot, and they just, they didn't think their wardrobe out correctly. Because then we get part of the deleted scene that we saw where he shows up there and he finds the phone in the deleted scene. But here, that's not even a factor, because him and Chloe aren't walking around looking for Lois's phone for some reason. Like, they are in the deleted scenes. They just found the call, so he traced it there. So he shows up and he finds the two dead guys with the Lex masks on. she put Lex masks on these guys that she shot, which is creepy. And then he finds the hair, you know. Sorry, I didn't mean to trigger you again with the hair. And then he finds the picture. He finds the picture of Samantha and Lex from earlier in the episode, which means nothing. There is nothing here that would tell him what she is going to do. So.
Right. If it were any other Smallville episode, that's when he would whoosh off and, like, you know, stop her from doing something.
Well, it's like, in the original version of this episode, did they kidnap Lois and then make her shoot the gun and they reshot that? Like, I don't know. I was trying to make sense of it. Maybe they changed direction like halfway through and they didn't finish. But anyway, Clark gets, he finds out stuff, but nothing that's going to help him save the day here. So then we wrap back around now to the beginning of the episode. We have the rally with Jonathan, and then we get Samantha in her MAGA hat, as she said. it's literally the first thing I thought of.
I didn't say MAGA. I said red hat.
It is a political rally, and someone is wearing a red hat with a political statement on it. So I don't know. That's the first thing I thought of. So. Lois tries to like kick her out from backstage, but then they get into fight and. She knocks out Lois, and then she has Lois up above the stage with a sniper rifle, and Lois is like, you're not going to shoot Jonathan Kent. She's like, no, I'm not. You are. And she basically, you know, it's funny. Samantha's logic here, she lays it out. I'm like, you know, this actually makes a lot of sense. She's like, you're going to shoot him, and people are going to think, this guy, his wife is, you know, working at this coffee shop. This beautiful young woman comes and lives with them. They get a little too close. He spurns her, so she's scorned, and she's going to kill him. Because, you know, it is odd that he fired his, you know, political manager, you know, his campaign manager, and just hired Lois out of nowhere, right? So I can see how out of context people might spin that narrative. So it was interesting how she had thought everything through. So
it was also really interesting because, like, as a viewer of the show, I never thought that Jonathan Kent would look at Lois and see anything other than, like, a young girl his son's age.
Oh, of course.
So it's like, Yeah, I mean, I don't think he has ever had that thought, but it's interesting to like note the context of this crazy person thinking of how, like, what's believable, you know?
Yeah, so, some outsider perspective on the whole thing. Yeah. And interesting, now, she knows who Lois is, because early when Lois was putting up all the posters, she's like, Lois Lane. She's like, how do I know who I am? She says, Lex always says you should know your enemy. So it's like, all right, thank you. Because she makes a crack at Lois, like, how's that self-defense training from General Lane? Did he ever teach you anything? Lois does say, yeah, he taught me this. And they start fighting about the fighting with the sniper rifle. And then meanwhile, Jonathan's speech is going on. And then Clark shows up just in the nick of time. Because, you know, even though Lois had fought Samantha gets the upper hand, grabs. She's like, all right, I guess I'm going to do it myself. So she grabs the sniper rifle and shoots at Jonathan. Clark shows up. This is a really cool slow-mo scene because he's running through the crowd and the bullet goes through a balloon and it pops. And, you know, just it's really cool. And I guess Clark has gotten faster and faster because he dodges in front of the stage, catches the bullet, and dodges out of there before no one sees anything. But they do hear the gunshots. Everybody, you know, everybody gets down. And then Clark goes up to where the...
I mean, this is just like a Senate like election, and Jonathan has all this personal security. Like, what? Like, I don't think that would happen.
Well, it's no wonder they're out of money if they're spending this much on.
I know. It's like, who do you think you are, man? And also, do you need that? Look at your son.
This is a
like you have no problem making him do like the chores that would take like 4 or 5 men to do, and then you hire 4 or 5 men to be your personal security team.
Well, the Kents are always in money trouble, so clearly they've made bad financial decisions over and over, and this is yet another reason. But to be fair, he had just been attacked and hung up from his feet the night before at his own home. So
that's true.
Let's give him that much at least. So, but then Clark runs up to where the sniper came from, and Lois is already taking care of it. She's like, "Hey, Smallville, nice of you to show up."
No, okay, so another thought I had during this episode, during this moment, was Lois, like, she doesn't know this. Lois doesn't know that this girl shaved her head, killed these two guys, and then sprinkled her hair on their dead bodies, like, with Lex Luthor masks. But, like, if that were me, like, you know, Lois Lane is like, a boss, but it's like, you just caught a murderer, like, a psycho. You just caught, like a really messed up person. Like, they don't show any scenes about this, but I would have liked a scene of Lois reacting to like how crazy this girl is, because like, even though Lois is like, you know, always brushing like her accomplishments off as like, you know, being no big deal, like, that's a big deal. She doesn't realize it in that moment. She's caught like an actual murderer, like a crazy, crazy person.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you know, we already have too many scenes as it is, Lauren. So
yeah,
there's no time. There's no time for that. So, we get our Luthor wrap-up scene, and the Art of War, Lex is looking at it, and...
it's another counter you need, the amount of times it's referenced in Smallville.
Actually, I actually have this, the book, The Art of War. I'll take a picture with it or whatever, and I'll put it on the podcast. But the reason I got into it was Star Trek, Next Generation. Sin Tzu, they mentioned him in an early episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, so I was like, oh, let me check that out. But anyway...
It's funny, the episode tonight, that's the first quote I had. I don't know when I heard this quote, but the first statement I remember ever hearing, or sentiment I remember hearing from this, was the like, you know, treat your soldiers like sons and they'll follow you anywhere. So it's funny that it was in this episode. That's I don't think it's from Smallville, like my first encounter with it, but that is the first I guess like principle I ever heard from that book. I have not read it.
It's funny because Lionel obviously doesn't treat Lex like a son, you know, yet they're quoting this to each other. And I love that he's just here to give Lex crap. He's like, hey, well, Jonathan the Kid has surged ahead in the polls. Lex is like, I had nothing to do with what happened. He's like, oh, of course you didn't. And I like how Lex is like, would it have killed you this one time to be on my side about something, you know, because Lionel is not on his side with this. And then just, it, you know, the complete escalation of their rivalry between them. And Lionel asks him, like, why are you doing this? And, you know, Lex has an interesting answer. He's like, because it's something I have to actually work for, you know, because, I mean, obviously he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and, you know, everything's come easy to him. And he has to, you know, it's that. And then also, you know, he wants to change the way people see him, to define himself away from his father. So I buy all those motivations for Lex to run for senator. And then Lionel calls out Lex for hiring Griff to find dirt on Jonathan. And Lex is like, oh, yeah.
Found your patsy.
Yeah. And then Lex is like, yeah, they found him dead in Suicide Slum. And Lionel, this literally made me laugh out loud watching this. He's like, it's a dangerous neighborhood, Lex. It's like, so like, oh my God, Lionel legit killed this guy. You know, like obviously he killed him after he burned that evidence. I'm like, oh, see, so that's what I'm saying. Like Lionel, he's helping out the Kents, but what's his reasoning here? What are his intentions? We don't know. And it's interesting. So this is pouring out for Griff, but we'll see him on Arrow in a few years. Oh, before that, we'll see him on season 9. He's a Kandorian. Spoilers. So anyway, but this is really an A+ scene between Lex and Al. I really did enjoy the scene between the two of them. And we have our wrap up with the Kents, and Lois is excited to report to Jonathan that they've gone up 10 points in the polls. I'm like, that's a lot of points. You know, to make it, that's a huge bump up from the sympathy vote, I guess. But that's great. And Jonathan goes off to start his day. Lois tells him his itinerary. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna remember. It's great. And then he leaves, and Lois tells Martha's like, yeah. So I hate to break it to y'all, but Martha's like, yeah, I know, we're out of money. Martha's like, okay, here's what we can do, but you got to promise not to tell anybody. So she's gonna take
pinky
up that
swear,
deal.
Lois.
That's right. She can take up that deal with Lois. Not the last person on the show not touched by lies and secrets, Lois. And they pulled her into it. So anyway, we have Depeche Mode, which I think I'm pronouncing it right now, or Depeche Mode. I don't know.
Depeche.
I don't never. Depeche. Is it Depeche? I had the same conversation.
Depeche Mode. Arrival.
Depeche Mode. Okay. I Want It All is the name of the song. This is their second song on the show. Obviously, they had their song at the end of Arrival in the first episode. And also, this is the quote from Lex Luthor, end of Lexmas, I want it all. So, you know, continuity there, I guess.
Oh, see it that way.
Hashtag, it's all connected. But Lana and Clark here, they make up. It's funny that Clark goes upstairs and Lana is still obsessed with her astronomy looking out his telescope. Am I right? But
this was a good scene.
It was a good scene, right? Because he admits like, hey, I mean, he doesn't really admit the truth, but he apologizes and he offers a good explanation and she's truthful with him. So for Clark and Lana Lost scenes, this was a good one, wasn't it?
It was. And also, I can acknowledge that like I need to like address some things and find a way to not hate Lana as much as I did when I first watched this show. But she was really smart with this observation. And also, I just really like the writing of this where she's like, you know, I saw the ship and the ship come out of the last meteor shower in the like earlier this year. And there was another meteor shower. And I'm thinking there was a ship there, too. The way that they wrote this and the way that she delivered her lines, it kind of gave me goosebumps. It reminded me of when I used to see like Roswell promos on like the WB in ABC. There's just something like really fantastical and like sci-fi about it.
Mm. Yeah, and this is, you know, Lana is now she's on Lex's journey now from the first season. She's like, I think there was an alien ship that came down in the first meteor shower when we were kids. What if it landed here and someone's been living among us? It's an alien this whole time. Clark's like, oh my God. Like he can just internally he's like, oh, the worst.
Well, what was rude is that we didn't get to like witness any communication after that. It was such a good tease, and it was so painful that they didn't. We've talked about this. Smallville was really bad at giving us 2-minute long conversations, expecting us to just like.
Well, I think you know, it's interesting looking at all these deleted scenes and stuff. I was thinking to myself, well, Lana's in 2 scenes in this episode. Why don't we just take those out and put all these other ones in? But then, like, this is kind of a big story point that she shares with Clark, her, you know, why she's so interested in astronomy right now, and then her theory about the ship. I was like, well, if you take these scenes and then the one with Chloe out, you know, about Clark and Lana's intimacy, you take those 3 scenes out, you can really put them in any episode. So, I mean, I guess they're running out of time because the 100th episode is coming up, that kind of thing. But I don't know. Like, I wish I could just re-edit this episode. Take out the end media res, you know, start it properly, use the deleted scenes. Of course, I don't know. There's no payoff to that Lois's lost cell phone and her ringtone. It doesn't make any sense with anything, so I'm not sure how you would incorporate it. But you at least put in the other Jonathan stuff, because I think it's really good, because this is like a Jonathan's last real episode, really, until, you know, Reckoning. I mean, that counts as, but that's not really a Jonathan, it's an Everybody episode. But this is like the last Jonathan episode, if there ever was one. So let's use all those scenes. Let's take these Clark and Lana scenes out and put them in another episode. I don't think there's any left, though. I don't think there's time. So I guess that was the issue. But anyway, you see what I'm saying? Like, you could restructure all this, and I think you could lose if it's like, oh, what's important here? Well, not the Lana stuff, not to the story they're telling this week, you know, so put it somewhere else. But there'd already been a couple episodes this season where Kristen Kirk wasn't in, so like, look, we're paying her for every episode. We gotta work her in these scripts.
Right. I will say, I see what you're saying, and yes, I would love to see one that doesn't start out at the end of the episode. But I stand by what I said in the beginning of our discussion that despite the fact that this episode was traumatizing to watch, I think that it didn't really waste a lot of time, and the drama, again, I like it because it didn't feel throwaway. It didn't feel like it was instigated for the sake of having drama that week. It was all like, those are important conversations for all those characters to have. So I actually pretty enjoyed this episode besides Bald.
Very good. And then we're back to the shady alley behind the Talon, where all the nefarious business in Smallville goes down. Lionel pulls up in his limo, and Martha's like all looking around, and she's like, well, thank you for coming. He's like, oh, of course. And he says, quote, I'm always here for you, Martha. It's like, oh, creepy. So she's going to take his offer, take that money, and save Jonathan's campaign, and there we go. So if you were Martha, would you have taken this money? Do you agree with her decision?
I don't think I would have taken it. Remember, I have two things. I have hair and I have integrity.
That's right. Very good.
I already told you I would not take money for certain things, so.
It seems Jonathan Kent, after yesterday's theatrics, has surged ahead of you in the polls.
I don't have anything to do with that.
No, of course you didn't. But it looks as though your disciples tried to follow in your footsteps. They have succeeded in creating quite a mess. How does it feel, Lex? That people worship you.
Being the idol for a cult of psychopaths isn't exactly a power trip, Dad.
Oh, but I suppose being a state senator would be. Isn't that why you're running for office?
You want to know the truth? I'm running because it's something I actually have to work for.
Yes. And your noble efforts include employing hired guns to dig up information about the Kents that could destroy them.
Well, so much for your fatherly pride and support in this campaign, huh, Dad? Griff's dead. His body turned up in the back alley of Suicide Slums this morning, and somehow I don't think the Kents did it.
Dangerous neighborhood, Lex.
Would it have killed you this one time to actually be on my side?
Fanatic got a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 2 out of 5. So, Lauren, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Fanatic?
I literally said this last time that before I grade episodes, I need to look at what I graded the last ones, and I didn't do it.
And you didn't do it!
Well, I did like it, but I was still freaked out, so I'm going to give it a C+.
You liked it, but you were still freaked out. So C+ from you. Yeah, as for me, like I said, I had no memory bordering on negative memory of this, but I actually really enjoyed it, and I'm gonna give it a B+. Because I you know, having the adult plot line, you know, the lots of just little moments between the characters were great in here. I really did like it, and there's no kryptonite, there's no meteor freaks, you know, it's one of these like Metropolis adult stories which kind of mix things
That's
up.
That's true. Right.
And we explore some of the more of the motivations between you know, why Lex is running, and you know, the effect this has on Jonathan. You know, this is really, you know, I mean, they mentioned the companion, like, we don't think he really did anything with it between when introducing it and paying it off. I'm like, I don't know, I think this is the episode that does that. This is like, here they are in the campaign trail, the things that happen. So I think if you're going to do a storyline like this, you have to have an episode like this to kind of, you know, or if not,
yeah,
what's the point of the storyline? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so C+ for you, B+ for me. Let's move to the tally board. We have In Meteores, my favorite thing. We have +1. That brings us to 3.
Only
so
3?
Far. I know, right? I made this a tally board because I'm like, this happens all the time. I remember every week whenever the show would start like that, I'd be like, ugh, another one of these. But apparently it happens less than I thought, or I think we're really going to get cranked up in the later half of the show. Because I seem to remember at least twice a season an episode starting like this. So and then we have our blue shirt, red jacket. We have a plus one for that. And that brings us to 30 so far on the show. And finally, we have our hospital visits, plus one, because Jonathan goes to the hospital. That brings us to 77 so far.
Oh, my God.
We also have a plus one for movie plot as an episode. This is mini movies, but, you know, we're at 10 so far. So there you have it. Now, the Bechdel test, Lauren, is this a pass or fail? Because I think it's a pass, because at the end, I know they're talking about Jonathan, but they're talking about the campaign, like Lois and Martha now, and they're talking about it in a professional sense. So I am inclined to give this one a pass for that reason.
No, I fail it because they're talking about, like, they are talking about something that's professional, but they're talking about a man and his power.
Okay.
Like, Lois talks to Samantha. Lois and Martha talk together, and those are the only female-to-female interactions episode, right?
Yeah, you're correct. Okay. I always leave it to the guests to decide when I'm on the fence. So I wasn't sure. I was like, well, I'm going to give it credit because they're talking about, but to your point, if... Well, Jonathan wasn't having this going on. They wouldn't be having a conversation at all, which is in the spirit of the Bechdel test. So it is indeed a fail. So thank you for your input there.
Yay.
And that's going to do it, guys. For us, for Fnatic. That was fun. I was surprised that nobody said Fnatic. It would have been such an easy thing to... Because Lionel at the end, he's like, how does it feel, son, to have people worship you? You know? It's like he calls him psychopaths or whatever. But Fnatic would have been a real easy word to say. People. But anyway, fun episode, huh?
Fun. Still traumatizing. But yeah, fun. It's better than I thought. Like, I had a little bit of anxiety going into this episode. Like, oh, this is the one where there's a bald girl.
Well, there you have it. So, Lauren, if people want to find you out there and talk to you about shaving their head, where can they find you out there online?
Oh, God, don't. At Lauren Neckowin, just about anywhere, Instagram, Twitter. Yeah.
And as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movies, remakes, sequels, reboots, all that good stuff. When a franchise gets fatigued, you can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. And finally, I'm a host of Standard Orbit, Trek FM's original series podcast. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. Got a few Star Trek references in this conversation, as you guys heard. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. As for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysSoldOnSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. Once again, with one S. So, Lauren, always fun podcasting with you. You were on some of our crisis countdowns, and you've been on a lot of our crisis conversations as well. So it's a lot of fun having these emergency podcasts with you recently.
Definitely. I've had a lot more like screen time with you this year than I ever could have imagined. But it's the magic of being a Smallville fan. Some things do come back.
Smallville brings people together. What can I say?
It really does.
Because we're both fanatics, right?
Yes. But in my case, it's wearing a purple blazer every now and then and not shaving my head.
Fair enough. Well, on that note, thanks everybody for listening. Stay tuned next time. We talk about Lockdown. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Sometimes I try. Sometimes I cry, sometimes I die, it's true. Somewhere I find something that's good. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Jim Thomas, Joe McIndo, Steve Rogers, Thomas Navin, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Mariotti Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Casey Cochran, Andrew Parker, Catherine Emmerich, James Lee,
James Bandini II, Adam Sullins, Corey Moore, Dylan D'Antonio, Kathleen Holland, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Rachel Miller, Will Hunt, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirsch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Dineberg, Fress Horshey, Lonnie Williamson, and Dave Giannocchio. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there!